Hi, this is Julie Dolan.
This is Liz Dolan.
This is Sheila Dolan.
This is Monica Dolan.
This is Leanne Dolan.
News, talk, and laughs.
We tackle the world one cup of coffee at a time.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters
to Satellite Sisters to Go.
Today about the Writers Guild strike. We're here in Burbank. As we said, there are a lot of picket lines around town. But there was a paragraph in the paper that really made me laugh because it was a writer on a picket line saying the problem is picketing with people who churn out comedies for a living can be pretty funny. So he had to turn to his buddy and say, stop making me laugh. It doesn't look good. Everybody who drives up, we're just laughing. They'll think we're not serious.
Well, maybe it was our next guest because he was on the picket line yesterday and he's a funny guy. He's the creator and executive producer of Everybody Loves Raymond, which now, of course, is in syndication. If you didn't watch it on regular TV, you can now see it pretty much 24 hours a day. He's also the author of a very, very funny book called You're Lucky, You're Funny. It's just out in paperback. Hey, Phil Rosenthal, welcome to Satellite Sisters.
Oh, hello, sisters. How are you?
Was that you? Were you cracking your friends up yesterday on the picket lines?
I tell you the truth, I was too exhausted. It's 4 hours of marching up and down with a sign like I'm not a teamster, I'm a writer. I sit and I write. I don't march up and down.
Were you chanting? Did you guys come up with any good chants, Phil?
Yeah, call a podiatrist is a good chant. Let me lie down for a half hour is another good chant. Please. Try marching around for 4 hours.
Yeah, right. Holding up a sign. That's
well,
hard.
Yeah, the sign isn't so bad, but just on your feet 4 hours is hard. And I know people who really work for a living, they can do this. But writers, you know.
you're sitting or lying down most of your time.
Most of the time, yes.
Right. So just talk a couple of minutes about the strike, because it is a big national story. And
yes.
We're worried about our favorite shows. What's going to happen to Friday Night Lights if this goes on too long?
You won't see it anymore.
I know. But you, as the showrunner, as they say, you've been both a producer and a writer. You do both. And so you're kind of on both sides of this issue. But yesterday you were marching with the writers. They just want a few more cents of DVD. Do you feel like they're totally in the right, or can you see the producer's side?
This is the most black and white issue ever.
Okay.
This is the writers are 100% right. The main issue is you want to get paid for your work.
That's all.
And that I think everybody can understand.
Right.
You do a job, you would like to be paid for it. So if the studios and the networks, they take your show or your movie and they put it on the internet and they make money from it, charging advertisers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And keep it all and don't give you any, is that fair?
Not fair.
It doesn't seem fair to us either, Phil. This is Liz. It just seems you're not asking them to give you money they don't have. You're asking them to share some of the money they are making from your work.
And when we say money that they're making billions and billions of dollars.
Right.
So a little for the creative community, and it, by the way, it's not just the writers. We just happen to be first on the picket line because our contract was up first. The actors and directors, they're next.
Mm-hmm. Now, your wife is an actor.
Yes.
She was in Everybody Loves Raymond.
She played Amy,
yes.
Robert's wife, on the show. It's an interesting story how she got that part. You know how she got that part? She slept with the producer.
Okay.
Wow, some things in Hollywood never change,
I recommend
Phil.
It.
Monica Horan, of course, is your wife's name. But now, does this put you at odds, though, with actors that you know? Because now they're out of work. I mean, what is it feeling like on a set when something like this happens?
Can I tell you the truth? We were out there yesterday, and you see, if you go on the internet or read in the papers, all the actors are coming out because this is their fight, too.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we just happen to be the first ones out there because our contract was up first.
Do you think it's going to go on a long time, Phil?
I hope not. I'm tired.
I hope not, too.
One day you're tired.
I have to go back today, 1 to 5. I have to go back. It's very, oh, my goodness. It's, but I do enjoy it, and you talked about people laughing on that. There is a feeling of camaraderie. There is a feeling, oh, I don't get to see you all the time. Hey, here, we have 4 hours. What's going on? Right? What's new with you? How's the family? How's the kids? Everybody has the cell phones with pictures on them, and we look. And then a car comes by, and you wave your sign, and hopefully they honk and disrupt the work that's going on inside the office.
Oh, is that the goal of the honking?
Of course.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Everything is grinding to a halt because of the
like
honking.
We'd like the whole world to stop until this is settled, right? But I don't know how to do that.
Are you glad that You're Lucky You're Funny is out in paperback now? Because I think a year from now, we're going to see a lot of show writers actually writing books because of the strike. So it's a good thing you got out
ahead. Everybody should turn off their TVs and not go to the movies and read my book.
Okay. We think so too, Phil. It's a really, really funny book.
It's a hilarious book.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to know what it's like behind the scenes on any show in Hollywood, or if how you get started, or you know, how you can get your work on, this is critical reading. You're Lucky You're Funny.
Thank you.
Basically, it's you know, take your family, Phil, and exploit them. It's pretty much the lesson, right?
You guys might have a show in you.
That's what Leon was just saying.
We wanted to pick your brain on that a little bit, Phil. We figure you're the man that could help us shape up a concept.
I'm here for you.
Okay, here's the thing.
We'll meet you on the picket line. How about that? You've got 4 hours. We can work it all out.
Yeah, we can talk, but we can't sell it until this is over.
We've been through this before, okay? We worked with an unnamed production company. They were going to turn Satellite Sisters, the idea, into a show. And it was a half-hour drama, or a half-hour sitcom. Then it was a one-hour drama. Then it was a one-hour dramedy. Okay?
Really?
So it went through some changes, but here's the final pitch. You know, we kind of think, Phil, Satellite Sisters, five sisters. At the time, we were living on two different continents, three different cities, doing a radio show. We all have very different lives. We thought, pretty good concept, you know?
It's a perfectly valid concept, yeah.
Yes. Like, just in general, our actual lives are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, we have single women, divorced women, empty nesters, young kids.
We had all the demos covered, really.
Right. Cover a lot of bases. So in the final treatment,
I just laugh every time I think of it, because it's like a sitcom, what they did to us, Phil.
Go ahead.
First of all, five sisters cut down to three. Okay?
We knew that was going to happen.
We knew that.
Oh, boy, that's rough at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then...
Who's the two left out? Oh, my goodness.
Exactly, and then we're all 10 years younger.
We were
fine with that.
We were fine with that.
And
20 pounds thinner. Excellent.
Sure.
That's fine. But then, this is the mystery. Okay, they made us all doctors.
They really did.
Because there's not enough doctors on TV.
We were a doctor radio show.
It was not just us. They made our dad a world-class heart surgeon. And he was thrilled because he's like a steel executive. So he's like, I've always wanted to be a heart surgeon.
This is great.
And then when our mom said, well, what am I? I had to say, you're dead, frankly.
Of course. There's no reason why should we pay another actor.
Well, Dad had married a younger dermatologist, Phil.
Yes. You needed the evil stepmother who was the dermatologist, which is the metaphor for being skin deep.
This is fantastic.
That's what they explained to us in the meeting.
Because they know that, you know, they have this, they have you guys, so you can bring a lot to this new concept based on your life experience.
It was just, and sometimes you're sitting in the meeting, you're going, I don't know, do we need to be doctors? But we didn't know. We never sat through a TV meeting.
I get that all the time.
All the time.
What is the most unbelievable thing people have ever said to you? Like, oh, if you could take that character and turn it into...
Well, sure. Oh, we got such notes when we started... you know, the brother scares me. I would have much less of the brother. In fact, I don't really, I would feel uncomfortable with him near the children. Don't show him near the children. Are you crazy? Also, here was a good one. This was a lady, a female executive at the network, got in my face early on and said, if Raymond doesn't help out around the house, women won't like him. And I said, well, why did they marry him? We got lots of notes, like right after the table reading, which is the thing at the beginning of the production week where you hear the script out loud for the first time, mm-hmm. of the very first episode. Then we go back for notes, and then we hear from one top-level guy. At the end of this script, Raymond says, maybe to the parents, maybe you shouldn't come over so much anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the next episode, he wanted to know.
Yeah.
If he tells them that. I said, well, just off the top of my head, they don't listen to him.
If anyone's
the end
ever
of
had
television,
parents.
If you, right? Why do they come over so much? Why do they? And they don't. You know, they don't even ring the doorbell. Yes, they don't ring the doorbell because it's the end of television. If they have to ring the doorbell every time. No show.
We're talking to Phil Rosenthal. He's got a really, really funny new book out called You're Lucky You're Funny, How Life Becomes a Sitcom. It's out in paperback now. So we were kind of concerned that they killed off our mother and transformed our father.
Yes,
But at least it was so, like, wildly fictionalized. They wouldn't be sending us notes every week. But with you turning your own life and your own family into a sitcom, I mean, how did your parents take it?
Sometimes, you know, like at one episode, I sent my, this really happened. I sent my parents a toaster. It was the cast and crew gift. And I sent them a toaster, and it said Everybody Loves Raymond on it because I thought they would enjoy it. They're proud of the show, and they supposedly like me.
Right.
So I thought that they would like it again. I didn't hear from them, so I thought maybe it was lost. So I called them up. I said, did you get the gift? And my father answered the phone, and he said, what? And I said, I sent you a gift. Did you get it? He says, yes, thank you, very nice.
Uh-oh.
I said, well, did you see what it was? He goes, what? It was a toaster, what? And I said, oh, I know what happened. He didn't open the box to see what it said. He just thought it was a, go get the box and open it. I'll get the good reaction right on the phone. He'll be delighted.
Oh, yeah.
There's a long pause, and he says, I don't have it with me right now.
Uh-oh.
I said, what did you do? He says, your mother wanted a coffee maker. They took it to Bloomingdale's, lied to them.
And they take everything back
right?
to Bloomingdale's.
Lied to them and traded my gift for a coffee maker. And our joke in the writer's room was that somebody probably got that toaster from Bloomingdale's, got home, opened it up, saw what it was, put it back in the box, took it back to Bloomingdale's and said, we'd like the Frasier toast.
We're talking to Phil Rosenthal. There are a million stories like that in his book, You're Lucky, You're Funny, How Life Becomes a Sitcom. It's just out in paperback. And because the TV writers will be on strike, this is an excellent, excellent thing to fill in with. You know, Phil, I love sitcoms, and I'm worried that they're dying. Are they dying?
Yeah. Yes, at the moment. But it'll be back. As soon as somebody writes one that's a hit, everyone will say, let's go over there and start imitating that now.
Okay.
You know, it's all cyclical, right?
Yeah.
So it'll
you don't
come.
Think we're going to get more reality TV?
Yes, you will, especially now with the strike. You'll get a lot. But this glut of reality shows, you know, it could signal something larger than just a trend, and that is the end of civilization.
Okay. It seems to always come back to that.
Yeah, it does.
I think we're close with The Bachelor. I don't know if you've ever seen that show. But...
Phil, can you stay with us a few minutes longer?
As long as you like. I like the system.
Because I know you're going to Russia to help work with Russian writers on creating sitcoms. And Julie lived in Russia. And I think she can tell you that they are not funny at all, Phil.
Perfect.
Stay with us. Our guest is Phil Rosenthal. You're Lucky, You're Funny is the name of his book out in paperback.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and
for
chilling
sure.
there
yes.
with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Liz, you know we love talking about FrameBridge, don't we?
We do. because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting FrameBridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah. Any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the FrameBridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift-giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and FrameBridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but FrameBridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? That's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or see a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's FrameBridge.com. Thanks, FrameBridge.
This is Liz, and I am sitting here with Leon. And where are we, Leon?
We are at the Paley Center for Media in beautiful Beverly Hills, California, Liz.
Right. The beautiful Paley Center. You hear us mention all the time that this is where we produce Satellite Sisters. And we've gotten some email from you wondering what goes on at the Paley Center. So there's a beautiful facility here in Beverly Hills. There's another one in the center of New York City. They have all kinds of fantastic events, programs for adults and kids going on all the time. So if you want to see their schedule, their location, and any more information about this organization, go to paleycenter.org. That's paleycenter.org. There's just loads going on here.
Liz, when we walk out our door, first of all, it makes me laugh because we're sitting in the wing donated by Larry David.
Yes.
Okay. From Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Uh-huh.
And as many of you will remember, that particular episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Ted Danson got all the credit and Larry did not. Oh, no. It was shot right out there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And true Curb Your Enthusiasm style. So I get to look at that funny, funny picture of Larry David. And then along the wall are all the pictures of all like the full cast, producers, writers of all the television shows. They do fantastic programs in the fall and in the spring with complete cast, including the writers and executive producers of some of your favorite TV shows. You know, it is a museum of television and radio. So, for instance, if you visited us today, Liz, you could go right upstairs to the screening room. It's Dean Cain's birthday. So they're screening several episodes of Superman.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you can also see a couple of episodes of Friends, voted number five.
In case there are any haven't seen.
Number five sitcom of all time. And then just to wrap up your day here, you know what else you can watch at the end of that? A Flintstones episode. Because that that's some vintage television if there ever was one. So that's just one day here in
the
life.
And that's just TV. How about radio? Yeah. They have like radio files. You can sit here in the listening room, listen to all kinds of classic radio. So check it out. PaleyCenter.org has all the information about the programs, about the locations. It's really a good thing to try out if you're visiting either L.A. or New York. We encourage you to go check out the Paley Center for Media.
And just for Satellite Sisters regulars, you're really going to appreciate this tidbit. Guess what's right across the street from the one in Beverly Hills?
Baja Fresh. We are the Satellite Sisters, and you can always listen to us online at satellitesisters.com. I'm Liz Dolan. I'm here with my sisters, Julie Dolan and Leanne Dolan. Our guest is Phil Rosenthal. His really funny new book is out now in paperback. It's You're Lucky You're Funny, How Life Becomes a Sitcom, Leanne.
Now, he created Everybody Loves Raymond, so now they're sending him to Russia to learn to teach the Russians how to create sitcoms. Phil, why? How?
The president of Sony asked me. They had just started to do sitcoms. They never had sitcoms in Russia before because, like you said, they're not so funny.
Yeah,
so
Julie lived there for 4.5 years, right, Joel?
Yeah, so it's the Russian TV. They just never had anything like that on
There's
Russian
nothing
TV.
Like it. So no. just, they, you know what the first sitcom was there 2 years ago? The Nanny.
The Nanny. That's what I was going to tell you because it was exactly like the American show. They had a Russian woman with that Fran Drescher voice in Russian. So
Speaking
I
Russian.
Think... This is what I think you need to check when you get over there to see if there is a show called Everybody Loves Yuri, because I'm afraid they've already ripped off your show.
No, that's what they're doing now. And they want me to go there and show them how to make our show into a Russian show, help guide them through the pilot process and everything. And then we're making a documentary about me going over there.
Fantastic. So I have two pieces of advice for you.
Please.
Okay, first of all, you need thick-soled shoes, rubber-soled shoes.
I got them.
Okay, now you can't wear L.L. Bean boots because they'll laugh at you and you'll get beat up in the metro if you wear those.
I got old man shoes, those MBTs, you know?
That's what you need.
That's what you need
because the cold comes up from the pavement of those really big, you know, paver blocks that they
have. I'm scared more than anything about the 30 below zero in Moscow.
Well, the sisters have been there. It's nippy. You just got to get yourself a good hat and a coat and the good shoes. That will help. Here's my second suggestion. Pelmeni. You want to write that word down because that's pelmeni. It is like a Russian tortellini, and that's really about the only thing you want to eat over there.
Really?
Okay,
you can have pelmeni. Moscow had all these fantastic.
Well, they have now. Though. They have fancy restaurants, but I'm talking about like when you're trying to work on the sitcom, and they say, "Okay, Phil, what would you like to eat for breakfast?" You say pelmeni, and they'll bring you a bowl of it's in a hot broth, and there are these little tortellinis, very good. Then lunchtime comes around, they say, "Phil, what do you want to eat?"
Yeah.
And they have a lot of salads with mayonnaise, which you're not going to want.
Right.
You just say pelmeni, okay?
Really?
Dinner. What do you want for dinner, Phil? You have borscht once or twice, but then all the other stuff, you're just not going to want to eat that meat. And who knows where the fish came from.
Really?
Pelmeni. That's the key.
Julie,
you know
I think you're
I'm
scaring
already
him.
Sick of the pelmeni, but I haven't
No,
eaten
you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
It's
good.
Good.
It's hearty. It provides substance. You know, it's really good for you. So
but
that
he's
would
such
be
a foodie, Julie. Phil Rosenthal is a foodie. There's
I'm reading about Cafe Pushkin and
We went there.
No, they do. Now they do have some spectacular restaurants, and I would put Cafe Pushkin on the list. And where all the supermodels go, Cafe Vogue. That's how you go. Just say that.
Vogue.
Cafe Vogue. That's how they say it.
What am I going there for? To get
the
angry?
Gangster, no, the gangsters and
I'm
the supermodels.
I'm just going to get angry if
no,
I
No, it's
go
good
there.
People watching.
I can't do anything. I'm married with two kids.
No, you got to go and watch this film.
I watch and it just makes me mad.
You know, and the Russian women were very little clothes.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Really?
Even at 30 below. We couldn't believe it when we went, Phil.
They're very aggressive dressers.
All right, I'll have a look.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt to look.
All right, Phil Rosenthal, thank you for joining us on Satellite Sisters.
Phil, I love the sisters.
Phil,
very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And his wife are going to be performing this weekend at the Palm Beach Performing Arts Center. They tell you about the arguments they had in their real marriage, and then you get to see the scenes from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Fantastic. So check check that out if you're in the Palm Beach area. You're Lucky You're Funny is the name of the book. It's now out in paperback. Good luck on the strike, Phil. We hope you're back at work very soon. Welcome to our lives. We are the Satellite Sisters. I'm Liz Dolan, and I'm here with my sisters, Julie, Sheila, Monica, and Leanne. Here's a little secret you don't really know about us. We talk to a lot of people on the show. Every day you listen, some really fun people. More often than not, though, they're somewhere else in the world. We're talking to them on the phone. So it's very special for us to have someone visit us in the studio. And today it's particularly special because our visitor is one of our all-time favorite Satellite Misters. Sitting with us here in the studio right now is Alan Alda. Welcome back to Satellite Sisters.
Thank you. Thank you. And I love being on the program. What a great idea, the Satellite Sisters. A great idea to have five nuns do a radio show. It's so nice.
I know. Yeah. You know, actually, once we did interview someone
yeah.
who thought they were talking to nuns.
Yes, really.
And after we the interview was over.
It was Katarina Witt,
Katarina Witt
skater.
Yeah.
And
what, like, how did that skew the interview?
Well, you know, she's kind of a wild gal, Katarina Witt. She's lived a wild life. And it was just about halfway through when she realized, oh, you're not real sisters?
So I can speak freely now?
So she let it rip once she knew that we weren't members of a particular order.
Yeah. But so why do you wear these wimples? I don't get it.
But you can appreciate this a little bit because you have daughters, right?
Yep.
And you write a lot. Your new book, which is such a pleasure to read, Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself, a lot of this is you giving advice to your daughters about the kind of life you want them to lead. Have you always been an advice giver? Does that come
yeah.
naturally to you?
Yeah, but
or does that come with wisdom?
Yeah, well, wisdom maybe comes later. I don't know. But I always was trying to get my kids. We have three daughters. And I was always trying to talk to them at the dinner table about world events and get them curious about the world. And their eyes would sort of roll off to the side, you know. So at one point, when our oldest daughter was graduating from college, I was asked to speak at her commencement.
That must be a little intimidating.
Well, it was, but I leapt at it because now I could talk for 30 minutes and she'd have to listen to me.
Oh, so that was your strategy.
Yeah.
This is for you right there in row 22.
And I spoke directly to her by name. I said, you know, she's standing in for everybody. And I talked to her. And of course I had advice for her because we wish for the best for our kids. And advice is a weird thing. You know, when you're giving advice, I think you're talking to yourself.
Absolutely.
There's this tremendous wish and hope involved. You hope that this young person will turn out to be like what the advice asks them to be. You also hope and wish that you already are like that,
right.
which is probably a little farther from the truth.
You're trying to create the illusion that, yes, you are. You have achieved these things.
You're hoping that you yourself can do this, you know. So that's, in a way, when I went back and started to think about these things I said and realized I had been talking to myself, that's why the book is called Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself, because I'm at a point now where I'm really trying to figure out the meaning of my life and what I care about and what'll give me a kind of a long lasting sense of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the paradox
yeah.
that I decided is at the center of your book. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you're all about make sure your life has meaning, and you talk about that in many of the speeches and the other things you've written in the book. On the other hand, you say, you give a piece of advice, don't go off in search of meaning with a capital M. So how do we live a life of meaning without going off in search of meaning? This is why I needed you here in person
right.
to talk to us.
Well, that's why I put it at the end of the book. So you so I'd get you to read the whole rest of the book first before I tell you that it's quixotic. And the funny thing is that the more I tried to figure out, man, I really personally did try to figure out the meaning of my own life, which is odd because even I thought that I had a meaningful life up until the time I asked myself that question.
And when you asked yourself that question, I didn't realize you had a brush with death in Chile. Yeah. And you were really forced to look death in the face.
And that's what brought it on. I wasn't, this is amazing. I wasn't afraid of dying. In fact, I was in so much pain from an intestinal obstruction. I would have been glad to die to get rid of the pain.
Mm-hmm,
and
really?
That's not a joke. It's true. And this wonderful doctor, Dr. Zepeda in Chile, where I was at the time in a small town, he saved me. And when I woke up, I was so glad to be alive that I was more alert to life than I had been before when I was enjoying my life so much.
And how old were you when that happened?
4 years ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was that recent.
Yeah. Yeah. So for these 4 years now, during which time wonderful things have happened to me.
Right. You've had a great 4 years.
Yeah.
Emmy, Tony, Oscar nomination, yeah, right? Best-selling book. Your last book,
and
Never
this
Have
book
Your
too,
Dog
This
stuff.
Book is going to be a bestseller in a day or so. So on the New York Times bestseller list. So all of these things would never have happened if I had died that night. October 19th, 4 years ago. So I'm very much aware of what it's like to enjoy life now more than I ever was. And I'm therefore very interested in making this new life that I have for free account. I mean,
So what's so different? Well, what are you doing differently now that you wouldn't have done 4 years
this
ago?
This is the thing. Looking back over all, that's why that paradox is there you talked about. Looking for meaning, I find, after all this thinking about it, looking for it doesn't seem to do it. But and this sounds really new agey, weirdy, you know, 60s stuff. Being aware of what's happening to me right now, every now that I'm in, is what gives me a sense of being alive more than anything else. And if I can keep that going right up to the end, it may not give meaning to my life, but it kind of obliterates the need to look for meaning.
I'm right here. I'm too busy to look for meaning because I am present right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Living in the moment here. Yeah. I know the moment is in line at McDonald's.
Day, look at my finger. I caught my finger in the door. In
it's
airplane.
All black and blue, Julie. Yes. You can't see it.
Yeah, Julie, ouch. I haven't heard a word from you yet.
When you're thinking about living in the now, does that mean are you a bigger tipper than you were before? I mean, how does that play out in your day to day?
You know,
life?
It's funny. I hadn't thought about that, but I am a slightly bigger tipper. Isn't
okay.
that funny? I must just be more aware of the other person there. You know what I notice is when I'm and by the way, I'm not. This doesn't just go back to the '60s, so I'm not merely old fashioned. I'm really old fashioned because this goes back to Marcus Aurelius 2,000 years ago, who said, "All we have is now." And a scientist told me lately.
I thought Buddha said that, but all right, Marcus Aurelius.
You know, Buddha came later. I mean, he was like he was just before the '60s. a brain scientist told me that our awareness of now only lasts about 5 seconds, and everything prior to that is memory. So this 5 seconds keeps moving along a track, and I'm trying to stay up with it, you know, and not get into memory. When I just said Marcus Aurelius before, that's no longer now. We're all remembering that.
Okay. See, yet another paradox. This is so much deeper than we thought we were getting ourselves
into.
But
when I do try to stay now, stay here and be in now, I'm trying to say it in a way that's more 1969 than 62, I find that colors are more vibrant, people are more interesting. More interesting thoughts come up in the back of my head. I like it a lot better.
Wow. Alan Alda is with us. Of course, you can recognize that voice. The title of his new book is Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself. It's full of a lot of really interesting thoughts about how we should all conduct our lives. One of the pieces of information you give, I think it's to one of your daughters in one of the speeches, is be potent. And I just thought that was a very unusual and inspirational choice of words. Why potent? What is that about for you?
Well, I think for me it's about being strong and being creative and letting things come from you that that you maybe didn't even know were in there. I want my daughters, I always wanted my daughters to be courageous and brave and have chutzpah. And I told my oldest daughter at that point that You know, nothing important was ever accomplished without chutzpah. The signers of the Declaration of Independence had chutzpah. Mm-hmm. And it's a... Do they say chutzpah in Texas, Julie?
I'm looking for a spell check on that,
because
I don't think they have that word here.
It's
chutz. It's a good thing I've lived in a lot of foreign countries. Yeah. So I'm able to follow along.
Well, I teach everybody who doesn't know. I teach them chutzpah and kishkas and things like that.
But does that mean, but that's interesting about your daughters. Does that mean that you have, you know, I think daughters were always brought up to be nice. How does that play?
Well, I mean, nice is okay as long as it just oozes out of you. But I don't know if it's something to aspire to, especially the version of nice that most people have, which is passive people who aren't with no chutzpah, not getting what's due them. Mm-hmm. You know,
do your daughters have chutzpah? Is that how you'd characterize them? Did it rub off? Did anything you said to them rub off?
Yes,
See, Liam's a parent. She just wants to know if she's having any impact on her children.
Well, two things you have to know is they don't listen, and they hear.
Oh, okay. Yeah, someone once said to me, they're only listening to 50% of what you say. You just don't know what 50%, you know,
right.
And that I've experienced with my two boys.
Two boys. How old are they?
They are 9 and 12.
Oh, those are great ages. Oh, they're all great ages.
Well, now you sit down with your grandchildren. You wrote about this. You have ethical conversations with your daughter Beatrice has kids, right?
Yeah.
And you just decide to take on ethics with them. How
come? We would go. I'd pick them up after school and I'd take them out to a tea shop. And I'd have tea and they'd have chamomile or something. And we'd talk about ethical questions. And they would be like 7 years old, 8 years old, you know.
Isn't that great?
They didn't actually know. I just said, we're going to have a grown-up conversation now, okay? So that sort of interested them. So then I would pick ethical issues from the news. Like there was the lady who burnt herself with hot coffee from a fast food restaurant. And she sued them for like $100 million. So I said, so what do you think about that? Is she right? Should she have sued? She burned herself with their hot coffee. Yeah, they said, but she should have known it would be hot. And then we would introduce new information. And then they'd have to, like, put that into the mix. And they couldn't always get the answer to the question. Nobody could. Even I'm not sure the jury could.
Right.
But they got the idea of thinking about what was right and how people should treat one another and that kind of thing.
And you feel like that's your part of your job as a grandparent.
No, it's fun.
Oh, it's fun.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Lee and Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's, okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled PROSE, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we We love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going, like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria algae body oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria collagen body oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
Who do you admire for people out there in the world? You write a lot about Thomas Jefferson in the book.
Yeah.
Why someone like that? Who are the people that you would pick out?
You know, I also write a lot about the great physicist Richard Feynman. And he comes closer to me to being a hero for me.
Why?
Because he was so curious and so interested in being honest with himself. He didn't want to lie to himself, and he didn't want anybody else to lie to him. And he too, was very aware of what was going on around him.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about being aware of now until the last minute.
Yeah.
He was dying of cancer, and he said to his doctor, "When I'm on the way out, I don't want you to give me an anesthetic. Because if I'm going to die, I want to be there when I do."
Wow. Towards the end of the book, a friend of yours. So not only do you ask probing questions, but it's a friend of yours who says to you, right?
Yeah.
What is the commencement speech you would give on your deathbed?
Yeah, I thought that was a wonderful idea. Because it's sort of an invitation to think about, if you have no more time left, what's the last thing you want to make sure you communicate to,
yeah,
to young people, you know, who are... You think waiting for these great words.
Who are not listening. I think we've
right.
established that.
Yeah. Right. They're listening to the commencement talk thinking they're on their deathbed. it did make me think more to the point about what I thought about things. And it kind of boils down to one word for me, I think, and that's to notice. And by the way, you know, I'm really not trying to give advice to other people in this book. I'm trying to report on what I went through
when
I tried to figure myself out. Because I think that if that's an honest report, it would be maybe interesting, might be entertaining, might be funny. And if it turns out to be useful to somebody, that would be nice too. But I hope it's a good reading experience.
Yeah, but it is true. It's because people forced you to think about these things by asking you these questions or asking you to do these speeches. And I think most of us, because there's no external force asking us, like, tell us the meaning of life, or please, you were Hawkeye Pierce, we're a bunch of doctors. How should we behave?
let me ask you three sisters, and you've had. It sounds like you have a good family relationship, although two of them don't seem to be speaking to you. Well,
that's the JV team. You're varsity team material.
What's the meaning of life to your in terms of your lives? Do you all three have different senses of that?
I bet we would all answer family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or just sense of connection.
Yeah.
You know, that it's the people you're connected to in your life That's what gives your life meaning. And if you didn't, and sometimes you have to work harder than you want to at maintaining those connections, but it's just incredibly fundamental.
So, Julie, if they think family is so important, what are you doing in Dallas, Texas?
This is the closest I've been to them in years, so I'm happy about that. No, I was living in Russia before then.
Oh, boy, how far away can you get?
So that's,
yeah,
no, that I think that's
makes
true,
you ask
though,
the question.
But
yeah.
It's certainly not about things or accomplishments. It is about these relationships and how you nurture those relationships and that's what gives your life meaning.
You know, another thing we've always said is that not every conversation will change your life, but any conversation can. I think that spirit comes out of your book so much. That you were always having these conversations with your daughters and with your grandchildren and with your friends.
And I noticed a couple of years ago that I've been trying to learn how to listen well as an actor all my life. And it occurred to me that in actual life, listening is very much like what it is on the stage, where you have to leave yourself open to be changed by the person you're listening to, or it's not real listening. That's how I feel about it. If I'm talking to somebody I know I don't agree with, if I say to myself, wait a second, instead of looking for an opening to defeat them in conversation, what if I really listen and see if they can change me for the better in some way? Maybe there's something in there that I haven't thought about. And when I do that, I'm much happier. I have a better connection with the person, and I feel like I'm not wasting my time.
You could never do talk radio.
I was just going to say
that philosophy.
Yeah, you're right.
Really very limited time.
I'd have to
listening.
Learn how to, first I listen to what the caller is saying, and then say, you idiot, and slam the phone down.
Oh, it has just really been a pleasure to have you here. Alan Alda is our guest. His new book, Things I Overheard While Talking to Myself, is really wonderful. You'll enjoy it. Go buy it. There's more information about him and about his book at SatelliteSisters.com.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really loved it. Thank you. Bye, Julie.
Bye.
Really seems, sisters, like we've been racking up conversations with some of our favorite satellite misters a lot lately.
Yes.
And we're very excited today to have Tom Brokaw with us. I have your whole bio in front of me, Tom. I just don't really think it's necessary for me to review. I think everyone knows Tom Brokaw. But you have a brand new book out entitled Boom, Voice of the 60s, Personal Reflections on the 60s. And you know what I loved about it, Tom, is your own sharing, kind of like what a geek you were in the 60s.
I was. I was not a baby boomer because I was born just before World War II began in 1940. Uh-huh. And my earliest memories were formed by that time. And then there was a sea change in the country. We were at peace. We had unparalleled prosperity. I grew up in what I call the innocent 50s. It was a time when America could do pretty much what it wanted to at home and abroad, but there were strong undercurrents that were at play at that time.
And you grew up in South Dakota, right? Most people know that about you.
I grew up in working-class communities in South Dakota. My father had been a construction foreman, worked for the Corps of Engineers. My mother always worked either at the post office or in retail shops downtown, wherever we lived. And so I grew up in that kind of prototypical 50s environment. And then the 60s arrived, and by then I was married, living in California, really, when the 60s took hold, first in Atlanta and then in California. And it was a pretty dramatic change in the environment around me, contrasting with how I'd grown up.
Yeah, it's clear in the way you write about it, because, of course, we think of you, Tom Brokaw, as being man of the world. You've been everywhere, seen everything. You're so cool when you're dealing with things, you know, world events breaking around you. And yet you write in Boom about, say, walking through Haight-Ashbury in the 60s and kind of being, like, shocked by what you were witnessing.
Well, I think anybody would have been.
Still a little scary these
well,
days.
The streets, I was just there again last weekend, and it's now mostly a tourist attraction, although there are some holdovers from the old days. But you have
we
to
like
remember,
to see those.
San Francisco was this elegant city that was a favorite destination of almost everyone in the post-war years. And then suddenly there was this neighborhood that had been transformed into a separate universe. Kids from all over the country flocked there. Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead had a house. Janis Joplin had a house. Everyone seemed to be, by my standards and by the conventions of the 50s, in uniform of some kind.
Uh-huh.
Long hair, peasant dresses. Obviously, by then, women were not wearing bras. There were lots of headbands, lots of macrame, lots of puka shell necklaces.
Oh, yeah. I just were thinking back on that. So to a nice boy from South Dakota, this was
right. Well, I would not, but by then, I'd been living in California a while, and I was not naive. I'd been over at Berkeley that day. The first time I went there, I'd been at Berkeley covering a big demonstration there, so I knew what was going on. But this was the epicenter of it. Rock and roll blaring in the streets until late at night, drugs everywhere. And so I became intrigued by it, went back several times and got to know the director of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, David Smith, who's in my book and reflects on those times, and began to report on what was, I think, home base of the counterculture.
It's so fascinating. The book is entitled Boom, Voices of the 60s, Personal Reflections on the 60s and Today. So it's not just sort of a tale of those times. You went and you talked to a lot of people who were the movers and shakers in those times and asked them to think about what they were doing then and if they really accomplished anything, Tom. Why? It's such an interesting take on it. Why was that important to you?
Well, I'm always interested in the consequences of history.
Uh-huh.
And the 60s really did divide up this country. The people who were on the barricades see the 60s through those prisms. The hippies see the 60s through their own prism. The more conservative people, like Pat Buchanan is in the book, see it as both a time of great opportunity for the right in American politics, but also was repelled by a lot of what was going on at the time. And I thought if we could create a virtual dialogue in a reunion-like setting, maybe it would be useful to the country in planning how it goes forward from here.
Julie, it's fascinating, isn't it? I know you've read it.
I know, and in particular, we're going to talk about it in a little while, but the women's movement. I mean, Liz and I are the oldest Dolan sisters, so we are a full-fledged baby boomers. We were the first women to wear those finky little bow ties, Tom, and head off to work.
Right.
And we believed it all. We believed it was all going to work out. And
right.
It was interesting, so many of the reflections in the book about what the women's movement didn't accomplish during the 60s.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised when it brought up my own recollections of when I first went out to go look for a job. This is Liz. It was still, you know, there were columns of ads, help wanted F, and there were columns of ads, help wanted M. And that seems like that should have been 100 years ago, not 30 years ago.
Well, I know, and it's you know, in fact, we're still struggling with it. I think that there is still unspoken discrimination, especially against women. If a prospective employer looks at a young woman who may have just gotten married and is thinking about having a child, that becomes a factor. In Meredith's case, when we were first married in 1962, she had a far better college record than I did. I got a job immediately.
Yeah.
She was told by one personnel director after another, oh, honey, you're a newlywed, you're just going to get pregnant, and we don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
So she ended up working for a time in an employment agency that had been trying to place her and very quickly became their top performer. So it wasn't that she had an absence of skills. There was just an acute absence of appreciation. The country was really run by white middle-aged males, and many of them had grown up with the conventions of their own lives, and we're not about to change that.
Right. Your wife is Meredith. You also have three daughters, and you share a lot of interesting perspectives in the book, Boom, from your daughter's point of view. But there's a story you tell about Meredith and her doctor-patient relationship that completely shocked me, Tom. This
right.
is Liz, when she was delivering your first child.
When our first child, and her father was a doctor. She'd grown up in a medical family, and I think her doctor knew that. Nonetheless, this doctor, when Meredith went in, she went into labor and we went into the hospital. She went in blithely thinking everything was fine. I was not informed of anything after what seemed to be kind of a long period. The doctor came out and said, well, you have a a girl, but it was a difficult birth. The baby was in a severe breech position, and I had to give your wife, I had to put your wife under completely. He never told her that. He never told me that. He never asked her permission.
That is so shocking. Leon, I'm looking at the look on your face. It's hard to believe that your doctor would not tell you, the patient, what is going on with you, the patient, and your baby.
He must have known.
I had a breech baby. Believe me. The doctor knows.
So that's one of the things. I know a lot of what you're writing about is what has changed and what hasn't changed.
Right.
But in the category of what has changed, wouldn't you say that at least there's not quite that paternalistic feeling towards women that there used to be? And that story with Meredith sort of points
no,
to that.
Society is now filled with women who are, Hillary Clinton is the leading candidate for President of the United States on the Democratic side at this time in the polls. We have a woman who's Secretary of State, very senior members of law firms. Sandra Day O'Connor broke the gender bar on the U.S. Supreme Court. I was at a meeting on Thursday here in New York at the Museum of Natural History, which is run by Ellen Futter, who used to be the president of Barnard, meeting with the head of the Rockefeller Commission, Judith Rodin, who used to be the president of Penn.
Who's in your book.
And these two very dynamic, highly qualified women were talking about some joint enterprises, and I sat back at the luncheon table and I thought, this is a perfect example of how far we've moved. But we still have the whole issue of the mommy track and all of its dimensions. And I had a pretty spirited discussion recently in South Dakota with the offspring of friends of mine from that time, and I said, look, you have to think about your lives and choices and how we're going to make those choices. And you can't expect the corporate structure to just roll over and make arrangements for you. You're going to have to start forcing them within your own family, which I believe strongly.
For me, for us here at Satellite Sisters, it was the women in the book and hearing their stories that was the most fascinating. And especially the perspectives, the difference between your mother, your wife, Meredith, and your own daughters.
Mm-hmm.
You have three daughters. We're going to talk about what the bigwigs say about the mommy track, but what do your own daughters say about that?
Well, I think that they're, it's a struggle. I'm being visited today by our middle daughter, who is about to give birth in 3 weeks to her second child. She works in the music industry.
Congratulations.
Which has a little more flexibility. But it's going to be tough balancing the demands of motherhood and the maternal bonds that come with it. She's got a terrific husband who is very helpful at home and is not at all resistant to the idea of fulfilling the part of the father well beyond the conventional expectations.
Uh-huh.
But these are tough choices. And our eldest daughter, who's an emergency room physician in San Francisco, has two children. Husband's a big-time radiologist, has a very demanding practice. The kids are, like modern kids today, are in lots of things, choir practice, soccer,
sure.
That kind of thing. And she finds herself going 18 hours a day and working shift work because ER work is not gender specific. You know, you have to have the emergency room going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
And it's hard to put that one on hold. So they're trying to come to grips with it. And I think society has to work harder at deciding what kind of economic structure we want to have. I do believe that the computer, email, and the internet are going to be enormously important tools because it will allow.
It provides a level of flexibility that we
we can just work at home.
A woman who's a lawyer has a baby. She can stay at home longer and work mm-hmm. right off the screen.
Mm-hmm. Julie, I know you wanted to jump in here because one of the things that comes out a lot in Tom Brokaw's book, Boom, is that maybe some of the leaders of the women's movement in the 60s didn't really anticipate this part of where they were leading us.
Right. You have that profile of Dr. Susan Miller, who was a primary
right.
care specialist and a grad of UCLA Medical School when there were very few female grads. But what she wrote at the end of her profile, that where she said what didn't happen in the women's movement was that women did not, what they didn't say about women was the most important thing that happens in society is that we perpetuate ourselves.
Right.
I mean, otherwise it comes to a halt if we don't have kids, raise them properly, educate them.
Right.
And I think that's right. For me, that was a big aha because They didn't figure that out when we went. They told us to go to work, Tom.
Well, I know.
They told us to break through that glass ceiling.
And you did, Julie. Congratulations.
We're exhausted. They didn't say anything about child care and babysitters.
I agree. Listen, the hardest conversation you can have sometimes, especially with an unmarried young woman who's really on a career track, is that I have this a lot at the office. I say, you know, having a baby and raising that child appropriately is far more rewarding and far more important than covering the next news story. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you can't come back. We'd like you to come back. But don't let the idea of motherhood be denigrated or belittled or diminished or set aside in some fashion. There's a story in here about Anne.
You really say that to people? I hate to interrupt.
I do.
I'm shocked that you can legally say that
to
people,
listen,
actually.
Well, listen, I can say it because I'm the father of three daughters, and I can say when they come in and ask my advice about promotions or whatever, I say, put this into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you're Tom Brokaw and everything, so you get to say what you want, but it doesn't mean that those young women's bosses feel the same way that you do,
and that them taking time off and
coming back is going to be quite such a good idea to their boss.
No, I paint the harsh realities. I don't say that this is going to be a walk in the park, but what I think has happened is that women who do choose to go off and have a child and to take 2 or 3 years to do that sometimes feel in the office space or in the workplace a sense of guilt transferred to them by other women. And I think that's tough, and that I think there has to be more conversation about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think corporate structure has to be examined. It's, as I said earlier, it doesn't mean that we're going to convert the entire economy so that we have long extended maternal leaves, but we should have more opportunities for men to take time off.
Yeah.
And we should be talking about this, and couples need to make choices about who's going to go to work and who's going to stay at home.
Mm-hmm. You know, in Boom, you talk to everyone from Nora Ephron to Gloria Steinem to Judith Rodin. Do they have a different perspective now than they had in the 60s? How did they express that to you?
Well,
are they surprised?
I don't think it's uniform. I think Gloria still feels strongly that, as I indicate in the book, that that the fathers have to step up more and that women have to have much more flexibility about going right back to work. Women who read that section, young women who work for me, say, listen, I would have agreed with her until I had my baby, but those maternal bonds are very strong. I didn't want to give that up. I wanted to be home. And even if my husband were home, it didn't mean that I didn't want to be there as well.
You know what's also strong, this is Leanne, is that men feel like they should be providers still. That's a very strong instinct.
It is, but you know, fathers are better now than they were. I think that my generation was the beginning.
Yeah.
But I do, as I watch young fathers now, I was just out with my granddaughters in San Francisco, and all the couples that were at the soccer game were dividing up about who was going to be at this field for the 6-year-old and who was going to be at that field for the 9-year-old. And the fathers were very much a part of that. And they were organizing the kids, and the mothers were going to one game and the fathers were going to another, and then they were all coming together at the end. So I do think that this generation is working harder at it, male and female, and that it will evolve to a better place, I hope.
Let's talk a little bit more about you again, Tom Brokaw, because you seem to be having a lot of fun right now. You're a NBC News special correspondent. Boom, Voices of the 60s is a fascinating read. Are you having a lot of fun at this stage in your life?
Well,
you're a grandfather. You're going
to
soccer games and stuff. That must be a blast.
I need to find the dial-down switch, not the dial-up switch.
Really?
I seem to be operating at the same speed that I was when I was nightly news anchor, and my life is divided up into more parts, which makes it more difficult in some ways.
Oh.
But I do like the flexibility that I have. I don't have to be somewhere every night at 6:30. There's even after all these, I've been gone since 2004, December, coming up on 3 years now, and there's still a conditioning. When I plan a trip, for example, I think, oh, my God, can I get back? I don't have to get back.
Oh, but we always love to see you back on the news. Our guest has been Tom Brokaw. He's, of course, the NBC News special correspondent, former anchor of the nightly news. His fascinating book, really, if you lived the 60s, or Leon, even if you didn't, you were too young to remember, I suggest you read it. It's entitled Boom, Voices of the 60s, Personal Reflections on the 60s and Today's. And it's sort of taking a measure of how far we've gotten and how far we haven't. For any information you want about Boom, you can go to satellitesisters.com. Tom Brokaw, thank you for joining us today on Satellite Sisters.
That is all for this show, but be sure to go to our website, our blog, you know where that is, satellitesisters.com, for more information about the show, about the sisters. You can email us there. The contest, lots going on. You can find it all at satellitesisters.com. Thanks for joining us today, and don't forget, call your satellite sister.